Okay, first of all, I want to welcome all the parents.
Thank you.
Okay, it is definitely one of my favorite weeks of the year when the parents get to experience what their children are learning, so that's really great. Secondly, I want to apologize. There might have been some false advertising, because last year during Parents Week, I gave Shir Chloe on the halachic definition of insanity. It didn't occur to me that they were going to put it into this year's schedule also, assuming that I give Shir on the same topic every year. So that is not the topic. I apologize to those who would like your money back. Okay, but there might be some wacky elements to today's year, so it'll be okay. Okay, so let's see what we have here. We're going to discuss the status of Maariv. And we're going to see that this will have halachic implications and perhaps even philosophical implications as well. Okay, let's see why Maariv might be unusual and different than the other tefillot we say on a daily basis. Okay, so we'll start with the first Gemara. So there's a line in the Mishnah that says, Tefillot ha'erev ein la keva. There's something that's not fixed about it. And the Gemara wants to know, what does it mean that Maariv is not fixed? In one way, is it different than other things? Okay, so at the end of the day, the Gemara in the second line says, Elamai ein la keva. What does it mean it's not fixed? Kaman d'amar tefillot arvit reshut. That arvit is actually a voluntary endeavor. It's not fixed in the sense that it's not obligatory. So already we have a surprising thing, the sense that arvit would not have the same status as the first two tefillot of the day. That somehow shacharis and mincha will be obligatory, and arvit would not be. So I think our reaction right away should be, why should Maariv be any less than the other two tefillot? What would make it reshut as opposed to chova? Does that point to some larger theme here? Okay, so let's leave that question aside for a second. And now we're going to see that this was debated throughout the Talmudic period. So now if we go on, so on a Talmudic level, at the time of the Mishnah, sages debated, is it obligatory or is it a voluntary endeavor? And now we move to the Amoraic level, Amrabaya, halacha k'devei omer chova, v'rav malacha k'devei omer reshut. Okay, so we don't have a psak here, but we have an ongoing debate, is Maariv obligation or an option? Okay, so we already have two questions based on the first source. Why should Maariv differ from, we'll get to the second. Okay, why should Maariv differ from the previous two tefillot? And what is the psak? Now, I think it's interesting because when you ask the average Jew on the street and you'd stop someone and say, is Maariv, how do we paskin? Is Maariv obligatory or an option? What would most people say? Well, based on, you guys, it's too knowledgeable a crowd, it's a problem. Okay, what if you just based on our experience, what does it sound like?
Yes.
It's obligatory, right? Your local shul has shacharis, mincha Maariv, right? And not because necessarily they are, like, you know, super into extra credit and therefore they scheduled Maariv. It seems like we relate to Maariv as part of the obligatory structure together with shacharis and mincha. Okay, despite that fact, we're going to see it's more complicated than that. Okay, in fact, later on in the Gemara, there's other names. The names that are used are Shmuel and Rav. And Shmuel says that it's chova, it's obligatory. Rav says it's reshut. Now that might help us work out how we should rule. So let's take a look at, we'll go a little out of order if you don't mind, at source 5. Okay, the Ritra, we have Yom Tov Ibn Ashpili, was a famous Spanish Rishon from the 1300s. Let us see one of the great commentaries on Shas. Let's see what the Ritra says. He's going to give two arguments that actually we should rule it's reshut. Okay, here we go. The Tanya Tefillah Arvit Raglil Merchova Vishum Reshut. Amar Shmuel Halacha Kedivah Merchova. Shmuel, the first generation Amora, says it's an obligation. The Rav, his colleague, Amar Halacha Kedivah Reshut. Now, how should we rule? Hagonim Zal Pasku Kamandam Reshut. The Tefillah Ki Isurihu Belacha Karab Isur. This is actually quite an interesting thing. Like everybody else in life, people have specialties, and there's no reason why rabbis can't have specialties too. So the Gemara seems to say, you might say to certain rabbis today, oh, you'll go to them for, I don't know, your medical ethics questions. That's what they specialize in. Okay, or this one is an expert on kashrut. You probably look around, but different people have different areas of expertise. That's the nature of life. So time of Gemara was the same thing. So apparently when Rav and Shmuel had all their classic debates, what do we say? Shmuel was an expert on monetary law, right? He, I don't know, he went to Harvard Law School. He loved he went to torts. He loved monetary law. Okay, so he would win in Mamon, and Rav was the king of Isser Veheter. So if I was discussing the kashrut of a corned beef sandwich, Rav would win. If I was discussing who should win the money that was found in the street, Shmuel would win. Each one had his specialty. Okay, now things get very interesting, guys. It shows you that life doesn't always fit in such nice binary divisions. What would you say, davening? Who should win if they're debating davening? So, It's not exactly Yisav Heter, but could we agree it's probably closer to Yisav Heter than Mamon? Like, you wouldn't say, is Marv an obligation? Oh, that's like, you know, who should win the cash? Right? Or do I have a good proof to win the money? Right? So apparently the Golden said, given that split, you view tefillah as more of an Yisav Heter kind of question. Something permissible or not permissible. More about ritual life, not about monetary life. And therefore we should follow Rav. Now notice again, guys, if we follow Rav, what should the Pesach be? We should. Okay, next. Okay, guys, I know I've been pushing off questions. I'll get questions in 1 second. I just want to get the structure started. The ode, the tefillah derabbanan. What's another reason to be lenient? We all know, very famous rule, biblical law, we tend to be stringent. Rabbinic law, we tend to be lenient, right? Davening Maariv is certainly, at most, a rabbinic obligation. So if it's rabbinic, and we're not sure where to go, we should go and be lenient. So notice what we just said, we had two good reasons why we should decide that Maariv is actually an option and not an obligation. Everyone, so far good? The Gemara did not have a resolution. The Gemara just had a debate. But based on our Rav Shmuel rule, we should follow Rav, that it's Rishut. Secondly, based on the fact that it's rabbinic, there's reason to be lenient. So surprisingly enough, actually the Pesach is that Marv is Rishut. Now you might say, but we still need to be pretty adamant about Davening Maariv. We'll get back to that. But I'm going to give you a good proof, and then I'll find the questions. I'm sorry I've been pushing it off so long, that it's really Rishut. Okay, everyone go to source 12 for 1 second. And I always wonder, how come I make the source with a certain logic? I always end up switching it. I guess I'm not such a well-planned educator after all these years. Okay, but here we go. Maybe it's just to create some extra drama and cheer. You can never tell what the next source is going to be. Okay, let's go to source 12. Here we go. The Eino Chozer Litbal Bakorum Arvit. Whoa, what do we not have? Okay, so I'll tell you something. I shouldn't admit this. I'll admit this. This is probably bad for me. I'm a less learned individual than I would be otherwise. Because as you know, guys, even though a lot of poskim think you should pay attention to Chazar HaShatz, I admit I tend to just learn a sefer during Chazar HaShatz. So I always lose out in Marv, because like Shachas and Mincha, I get to like plow through my sefer and make progress. But Marv, there is no Chazar HaShatz. So there's no time to learn during Marv. So why? But I don't know if you ever wondered that. You might, wait, why is there no Chazar HaShatz in Marv? We're going to have the Chazan repeat Shachas, we're going to have the Chazan repeat Mincha. Why shouldn't the Chazan repeat Marv as well? So now, at this point, we should all have an obvious answer. What's the obvious answer? Yeah. When you have an obligation, you want to make sure everyone gets it down, so you'll have the chazan repeat it. Maybe there's someone who doesn't know how to daven. Maybe there's someone that needs a sitter, so have the chazan repeat it. But if it wasn't an obligation to begin with, so it's not such a crisis if someone doesn't do it. So notice, it really does have implications that we actually paskin that Marv is a reshut, and that's why there's no repetition of the Amida. Okay, Zach Wild's been waiting a while. Go ahead. So that was not a pun. Okay, you're sorry. You've been waiting a while. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, just terrible. Just terrible. Yeah, go ahead.
So, going back to the Marv being
Jarabanan,
so would all three, don't all three of those are the concept, don't they all introduce the concepts of the three different dominants in the Torah? So, why is
excellent. That was exactly my opening question. Why should we say that Marv has a lesser status than the other two? We have not yet addressed that question. We will come back to that. Don't worry, we've got an answer. Hang in there. Yeah.
So another question. Do you think Marv should have an increased, I guess, a value, considering the fact that it's the dominant that sort of ends the day? So, I mean, I guess it's in a sense, I feel like it should be more important than per se Mincha, because I guess it has to
be more. Well, isn't it the davening that starts the day, though? Mm-hmm. First there is evening, then there is morning. It's not the davening that ends the day.
Look, it is an interesting question. No, I think Zach is on an interesting question, which I'm not going to address today, which is there might be a little bit of a clash between halachic reality and experiential reality here. Okay, what was said is correct. Okay, Mr. Weinstein is correct that in halacha, of course, the day starts at nighttime. So in that sense, Marv is the first feel of the day. So then you think about it as Marv, Shachar, Mincha. Of course, that's not the way we experience reality. We experience reality as starting in the morning. So does our experience have any role in halakha here where we would experience it more as Shachar, Mincha, Marv? That is a very good question, but a topic for another time. Okay, who else had a hand up before? Who I didn't call on? We're good? Yeah, Ellie.
Why are we assuming that
tefillah is Rabbanan? Yeah, but even the Rambam. So let's do the Rambam for a second, guys. What's the Rambam's position about tefillah? It's the right, but what's the right to pray once a day at any time? So everyone would agree, once you're on the level of the three tefillot at different times of day, that is universally agreed as derabanan. Okay, you're right. It could be in the abstract praying once a day is deraita, but the three level tefillah is derabanan. Okay, anybody else? We're good? Okay, great. So let's get to Zach Wild's point. Okay, so to get a little more background on this, let us go to source 3. Okay, this is a very famous debate. And as I said, one of the things I like about this topic is I think it has larger implications. It's not just a technical debate about tefillah. Okay, here we go. Very, very famous Gemara in Brachot. Oh, you know what? I just realized there probably, since there's so much Daf Yomi buzz, probably there's some parents in this room who are learning Daf Yomi, right? Mr. Asher is, right? There you go. So you're going to encounter what Daf you up to these days? 20. Are you almost here? Okay. So it's good. We're going to do a lot of Brachot if you cover some of your Daf Yomi ground. Okay, here we go. Itmar. Rabbi Yossi Bechina Amar, Tfilot Avot Tiknum. Okay, very famous. Come on, where does Tfilot come from? The Avot, Avram established Shachris, Yitzchak established Mincha, and Yaakov established Marif. Okay, great. Rabbi Shul ben Levi Amar, Tfilot Keneget Tmidim Tiknum. Says, no, it's not true. It is not rooted in the Avot. It's rooted in the sacrificial order. The Tfilot is patterned after the Karbon. And before you move on, this really ties in, arguably, to a greater conflict of themes we have throughout Tefillah. On the one hand, Tefillah has rules and regulations, right? On the other hand, there's a sense of spontaneity. And maybe, so maybe the greatest prayer would be, you know, you run into the woods and just pour out your soul before God, right? You know, like in Ushpizin. Maybe that is that's what Tefillah is supposed to be. Okay? So that's a conflict between structure and spontaneity. Very well known. What might you say right here? Which would line up with which, of course? If I focus on the carbon theme, where am I? I'm an old of structure. There are a lot of rules about how to bring carbon out. Here's a certain time, a certain person. If I go with the avot, there's a sense of the avot living in a less structured religious world, right? The avot didn't have to, like, you know, look up things in the Shmir Shabbat Gilchata, right? So in that sense, maybe here we have this split between structure and spontaneity. Excuse me. Okay, that being said, which carbon are we talking about? When we say they're patterned after carbon out? The Tumid. Okay, but now we're going to get to, I get to call on my brother-in-law. You can't be that.
It's only two carbon.
Yes, we don't have three, right? Because what was the Tumid? There was, of course, a Tumid Shel Shachar and a Tumid Shel Ben Harbayim, right? So the sacrificial order in the Mikdash began the day with the daily offering and ended the day with the daily offering. Now, just to realize one thing, okay, when was the end of the day, actually? In the late afternoon. So most people don't realize this. There were no sacrifices brought at night. Nighttime was kind of a downtime in the Mikdash. Right? So you have the Tumid Shel Shachar and the Tumid Shel Ben Arbayim. Now, of course, that would mean if I go with the Karban theme, I've got a great source for Shachrit, and I've got a great source for Mincha. But I seem to be lacking a source for Arvit. Like, where does Marav come from? Right, in the Avot, it lines up mathematically perfectly. Three Avot, three Tfilot on a daily basis. So does anyone know what the Gemara famously says? Okay, Zach Bernstein, the most well-groomed guy in Yeshiva this week. Yeah, go ahead, Zach. Okay, Zach, if you, just for the parents to understand, I was kidding him about his long hair for a couple weeks. Yeah, go ahead, Zach.
I'm not going to answer your question. I was going to ask my
own. Yeah, just wait 1 second. That's okay. Okay, wait, does anyone, yeah, Jonathan? Excellent, Yonatan. Because there's an idea that even though they wouldn't initiate any karbonot at night, but again, you have an animal, what if the animal was big, and the fire had not yet consumed everything before nightfall. So they would leave the leftover, evarim uptarim, right, extra limbs, extra fats, on the altar at night. So something is going on at night. So maybe shachris is parallel to the morning tamid, and mincha is parallel to the afternoon tamid, and marv is parallel to the leftovers. Okay, we're good so far? Okay, but now at this point, we should all realize something. Okay, and I find it interesting, the first time I found this idea expressed is the Pnei Yeshua, which is an achron on number 7. But maybe we'll just do it outside, but to me it's just obvious. I'm curious why no one said it. As far as I know, no one said it before the Pnei Yeshua. Okay, now let's go back to the other Gemara. We're trying to figure out why there's a debate about Marv. Why is there a debate if Marv is obligatory or voluntary? What would you say, guys? Think logically. What would be the easiest explanation to explain why this is such a debate? Why would some people think Marv is an obligation and other people think Marv is a voluntary endeavor? What would you guys say?
Well,
Okay, Benny Klein.
Maybe it's possible, but not every night would they do burning fast.
Okay, that's clever, but I think you can go even further. Roey.
That burning fast is not on the same. It doesn't have the same status as that.
Excellent. So this is a very interesting thing, because you have two Gemara debates that the Gemara never links, but it's incredibly tempting to link them. Again, what's debate one? Is Maariv obligatory or voluntary? What's debate two? Is prayer essentially rooted in the Avot's endeavor, or is it essentially rooted in the sacrificial order? Well, couldn't we say that those two debates go hand in hand? If I think prayer is rooted in the Avot, what should I conclude? They're all the same. There's no reason why Yaakov is a lesser model than Yitzchak and Avraham. So all three are of the same validity, so they're all a chiyuv. But if I go, as Roey said very well, if I go with the sacrificial order model, there's every reason in the world to differentiate, right? Two of them were concrete karbanot, the tamid in the morning and the tamid in the afternoon. And the nighttime is just the leftovers. That's not such a serious endeavor. So maybe that does not generate an obligatory tefillah. Okay, we're good so far? So the Pnei Yeshua says that. So now, in theory, he's like, well, now we think we have an answer. If we see the sacrificial order as the essential model, we now know why the evening service would not have the same status as the first two. Okay, Zach.
Do we have to choose one, either the tefillah or
corresponding? Excellent. Okay, so Zach is a good man. Zach is saying, I said before, maybe life is not so binary. So why can't there be multiple themes? So you're right, actually. In theory, we wouldn't have to choose. Maybe there are multiple themes. Although you still might wonder, like, is one somehow more essential than the other? But actually, I think Zach's on the right track here. Guys, let's argue on behalf of Zach's argument. Let's say we go with the Avot. Who could tell me why it seems that the sacrificial order is still rearing its head? Okay, what aspect of our halacha would seem to be a function of the carbon theme and not the Avot theme? Yeah, Avi. Okay, excellent. That was an excellent point. I wasn't thinking that, but that's actually quite good. Now, in fact, but you might see something even more interesting, guys. Okay, ready for life? We like, you know, as you guys know, I like it when life gets complex, when it's black and white, life's really boring. So let's make life a little complex. Couldn't you argue that Musaf is different than the other tefillot? That when it comes to Musaf, what's the theme? And certainly not. Right, well, there's no patriarch left, unless... Oh, I just thought of a Hasidic drasha. Jeremy Seidel, I just thought of a Hasidic drasha right now. What, okay, this is for you. What does Musaf sound like? Yosef. So Yosef's the fourth patriarch who then is this... I can't believe I never thought of that before. Jeremy Seidel, whoa, what of art. Oh, thank you. Right, it's a good crowd here. That's it. Ready? Could it be I'm the first person to think that can't be, right? Some of us have said that before then. Okay, but in any case, what would be a simpler thing to say? That Musaf is not a function of the patriarchs. Whatever you'll say about Shachris Minchum Arev, Musaf is only rooted in the sacrificial order. That would seem to be the answer, despite our little Hasid Joshua there, Jeremy. Okay, but that's one combination theory. Maybe some tefillot are avot, and other tefillot are karbonot. But you could also have a combination theory within a given tefillah. I could say, for example, Shachris is... Oh, I'm trying to think if I should do this tangent. Always debatable. It's not such an exciting one. Okay, fine. Okay. Where do we get the times of davening from? So that is clearly rooted in the karbanot. I'll just give you one example. Okay, I'll explain a terminology that maybe people don't know, and it'll be exciting. This week in shul, you can explain to your neighbor what's going on. Okay, so in a lot of your shuls, they probably announce... Maybe there's two minchas on Shabbos afternoon, one for the people like finish lunch early, and one for the people right before nightfall, right before sundown. So remember the terminology? They'll say mincha gedola today at 1:15, mincha katana at 6, right? That's what happens in your shuls. Okay, now, where did we get that from, that there's these two mincha time periods? So this is quite interesting. So we're trying to daven mincha during the time period that they would actually bring the afternoon offering. Now, normally on most days, what did we say? When would they bring the afternoon offering? At the end of the day. So what we would call mincha ketana, like the shorter mincha period. But here's a good move, guys. One day a year made life easy for the rest of the Jewish history. There was one day a year they felt a lot of pressure in the Beit HaMikdash, and they would move up the afternoon offering. Do you know what was the one really pressure day, Micah? Excellent. How do you know that, Micah? Okay, well, that's a good reason. See, guys, get SAR education. Who's your Rebbe for Gemara that year?
It wasn't at SAR.
Oh, okay. Ooh. Yeah, it's even better. Were you learning it outside of a school context? Who are you learning with? Wow, okay. Because I didn't realize Michael was a serious guy already in 10th grade. Unbelievable. Do you have a beard already in 10th grade, Michael? Okay. In any case, excellent. Okay. So, he's absolutely right. Erev Pesach was a huge day. Like, all these families said they're coming to Pesach, so it was really busy. So, to make life a little easier, they said, you know what, at Erev Pesach, you could bring the afternoon Tamid much earlier in the day. So what did that create? A sense that the mincha service could not only be in this katana time period, right, this restricted period, could even be in this gedola period. So now you know the terminology, right? When they say mincha gedola is earlier, they're saying, since at Erev Pesach you were allowed to bring the carbon earlier, so that shows you that mincha could really be done earlier. And mincha katana would be on a normal day, they would bring it towards the end of the day. But be that as it may, what do we clearly see? That the times for the tefillah is very much rooted in carbonot. So Zach Bernstein, excellent point. We now have two combinations, if we want to be less binary. Either different tefillah would have different themes. Maybe Shachrit is Avot, but Musaf is carbonot. Or the same tefillah could have multiple themes, that maybe the Avot instituted, but the rules of timing is a function of the sacrificial order. Okay, Joshua.
Can't you technically continue playing Shabbat until Hatzot because of Abraham and how he prayed during the day?
It is true there's a debate for Shachrit if you have the first 4 hours of the day or the first 6 hours of the day. But why do you think that the 6 hour thing is based on Abraham? Where do you get that idea from?
That he prayed during the day and the day continues until Hatzot.
No, but I'm saying you're assuming that it's rooted in Avraham. Maybe that position thinks that the Tamid Shel Shachar you had half the day. Okay, I'm not aware of any clear source there that that position is based on Avraham. Where did you get that idea from?
I heard it somewhere.
Okay. So I heard it somewhere. It's just not going to cut it, Josh. Sorry. That's not a source. Okay. All right, so see if you can find that. I'll try to look into it also. Now, I'm not saying you're wrong. It's not obvious to me that that's correct, that that's rooted in a sense of the Avraham. Okay? Yeah, Sage.
Well, isn't it
Oh, that's a good point. What do you think, Josh, about Sage's point? I mean, the Avram verse is about getting up early in the morning, right?
I mean, like, he prefers to, but if he had stayed up the whole night in the base, then he
hasn't. Wow. Joshua, you know, I'm very fond of you, but I think you're, like, squeezing it in there a little bit. I can tell me about it. Only yeshiva guy would say Be'eshkeim Avon Baboker is at 11:30 in the morning. Okay, amazing. Joshua. Okay, yeah. What? Okay, Arya. You know, Arya, I was going to make fun of you your first week back, but if ready, if you're volunteering for the job. Yeah, Noah Maimon. Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, Marv is a little bit easier, right? Because we already suggested that Marv might have a different status. But that's an interesting question about Shachris versus Mincha. I have one answer, but it's not a great answer. But some of it has been magnified over the course of history more than it originally was. For example, when the Birkat HaShachar originally instituted, when were they said? Do you know, Manoah? Okay, everyone know? The Birkat HaShachar. Yes, Sage? Yeah, they were like a response to what was actually occurring. Like, you got dressed, and then you would say, right, Malbishar Umin. Right, so again, if you take Birkat HaShachar out of the mix, and let's arguably take Karbonot out of the mix, right, so the gap between Shachar and Mincha starts to recede. So I'm not really answering your question, but it could be that our experiences of it is, larger than it needs to be. Like Shachar, if you excuse the phrase, Shachar has been like this growing monster over the course of history, where it maybe started out a shorter period and has been getting steadily longer. Yeah?
Maybe it's just like it's more of an experiential thing that, like, we do our Shabbat, right? We get like when we first get up, not in the afternoon. So we kind of like get it out of the way.
Okay, you can say it that way. No, but I think. I hear you, Ellie, I hear. I still think Noah's point is interesting. Like, essentially, what is the Pesukah de Zimra of Mincha as it were? Ashrei. So it's kind of funny. You have this, like, extensive Pesukah de Zimra to get in the mode for Shachrit. But Mincha, you should have, actually, you know what? you know, if anyone, it occurs to me, I know we like deep answers, not technical answers. Yeah, I think we have to admit sometimes technicalities might be right. Maybe we're just being very pragmatic. Like in the middle of your work day, it could be kind of hard to do a long Pesuk in Zimra. So maybe there we suffice with Ashrei, but in the morning it is more practical. So I know it's not a deep point, but it might just be about practical feasibility. Okay, it's okay for Allah to be practical also. Yeah, please. Ms. Gdalia, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the distinction between ritual and non-ritual.
Yeah.
In the Jewish realm, is it even non-ritual?
Okay, you're right. What I guess... Yeah, no, I agree with you. I didn't mean that I would make such a split, right? Obviously, you know, monetary decency and honesty is also between man and God, as it were, in addition, and is part of ritual life. At the same time, you still have a sense of specializing. I mean, this was Shmuel's legal specialty, and this was Rob's legal specialty. So I didn't mean to say that they really are part of separate conversations, but you could understand how halacha would follow Shmuel in one area and Rob in a different area. Okay, that's a good point. In fact, I just want to make your point even stronger. I think there's some really interesting test cases. As you guys will see, even though sometimes it's a mistake in education on my part, I can't resist a good tangent. Okay, you know, yeah, I should say this also. There's certain professors you have in life that the notes are locked in. Like the class doesn't change for 50 years. Even if like someone makes a Nobel Prize-worthy comment, the lecture is just going to proceed. But I can't teach like that. If someone makes an interesting comment, I want to talk about it. Okay, so Ms. Gdalia made a very interesting comment. So I'll just mention, what do you think, guys, what would happen if we had a debate about lending money with interest? How do you think that should play out? Is that interesting also? Because on the one hand, it's very monetary. On the other hand, it touches on the world of Aser and Heter, right? What is a legitimate loan? What's an illegitimate loan? So you're right. It is not such an easy dividing line always. What's the world of Mammon and what's the world? I totally agree with the point. Okay, let's just sum what we are right now if we get to the next move. Okay, a little interim summary. Okay, we have a debate if Marv is a Chiyuv or a Rishut. Okay, at this point in time, what is the easiest way to explain why it might be a Rishut? If we root it in Karbanot, the third Karban was not really a third Karban. Terrific. Okay, how do we seem to Paskin? Rishut. Okay, what were the two arguments for that? Why we should Paskin Rishut? Well, if we go with the Rav Shmuel rule, follow Rav and Isser. Second reason? It's Rabbanan. Terrific. Okay. What was one implication so far? That it's Rishut? That's why we don't have repetition of the Amidah and Marv. Okay? So at this point, things seem pretty smooth. Okay, great. But let's complicate things a bit. Okay? There are a couple of sources that seem to indicate that Marv might have more weight than we thought. Let's go back to source two. Another Gemara in Brachot. Again, I'm going to help the Daf Yomi people once again. Okay. Now, there's a very interesting concept called tashlumin. Let's say I inadvertently miss a tefillah. I can make it up by doing a double amidah the next time. Like I slept through mincha one afternoon, so I could daven marav twice. Okay, so let's see how this plays out. So the one brachot asks, Ibailu, tav lo pal mincha, if I missed mincha, mau yishuv pal arba shtayim. So even though I said we can, here the Gemara raised it as a question. If I miss mincha, am I allowed to daven marav twice? Now, the Gemara assumes that if I miss Shachris, I could certainly daven Mincha twice. And if I miss Mariv, I could certainly daven Shachris twice. So why is there a question? So if we skip down to Aval Hacha on the third line. Aval Hacha, now notice, again, the duality here of the two sides. Tfila b'makum korbani. We could say prayer is modeled after the sacrificial order. The kevan de avar yomo when the day has passed, but the karbano. So what's the claim? Why would it not work for mincha to marv? It's a new day, and maybe this, you blew it, right? You can't carry things over to the new day. O dilma, or maybe we say kevan de tsluta. Oh, let's see who speaks Aramaic here. What's tsluta? Prayer, good, as in tikabel slow tone, right? Rachmehu, prayer is about supplication for mercy. What should that lead to? Mercy's always in place. Now notice, don't we have the same duality once again? Right? The structure verse spontaneity duality. Here it is once again. So I would say that's a theme running through Brachot, running through the world of prayer. right? If I focus on structure, what should I say? No, there's a given day for your offering. You don't bring that offering that day. You can't bring it the next day. We might go with the more spontaneous aspect of prayer, right? It's asking for mercy. That's always in place, so I should be able to do it even from Mincha Amarv. Okay? What does the Gemara conclude? That I can. Okay? I can do Tashlumin. Now let's just think for 1 second. I can do Tashlumin for Shacharis, for Mincha, and for Marv. Does it strike anybody as a little bit odd that I'm doing Tashlumin for Marv? Wait, I'm doing Tashlumin. Yeah, Eli Jarosho? Couldn't someone argue that the makeup should only be for things that are obligatory? I miss him, it's Rashud. Life goes on, right? Not every voluntary thing has to be done all the time, right? Even if you love extra credit. Okay, so you can get extra credit this day. So the whole concept of Tashlumen is kind of interesting if we decide Marv is a Rashud. Maybe Tashlumen, this makeup date, would only be for obligatory things. Okay, yes, Joey. Interesting. You're saying you have an argument actually that the Tashlumin should make most sense there.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a fascinating argument. I'm going to leave it aside from that. That is a good argument. Guys, I want you, all the parents, you know that I have some very dedicated students. To honor Shir Chloe every week, Joey and Amikatz wear their fruit shirts. It's very nice. Okay, apparently watermelon shirt somehow thematically related to Shir Chloe. Not really sure why, but we do appreciate it, Avi. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Can we make the assumption that if it's faded, that the tefillah are based on Korbanot, that if you miss Mincha, you shouldn't say Mari because there wouldn't be fasted or hypothetically?
It's a little bit connected to the Gemara's question, right? I asked the Gemara, I didn't say exactly your argument, but it is a roughly parallel argument that if we throw the carbon theme in there, maybe you can't carry it over. I mean, it's not exactly what you spelled out the argument. It's clever what you said. But I think it's somewhat in the Gemara anyway, because we have the carbon theme would not allow for it. The Rachamim theme would allow for it. The Rachamim theme wins at the end of the day. Okay? We're good? Okay, great. Yeah, Charlie. Oh, that was very clever. Okay, so he is right. It's a little bit unfair. But, again, well, this whole shiur is going to be about not being so binary all the time. Okay? Because what was I saying? In the Rachamim theme, there's plenty of room for Tashlumin. In the Karban theme, there isn't so much room for Tashlumin. So Charlie's right, it's not 100% true. Can anyone tell me a great example of Tashlumin in the world of the sacrificial order? Where you miss one day, but you have a makeup? Yeah, Pesach Sheni is a great example. Right? Let's say you were Tamei on... See, Ozzy, your dad's a star here. Okay? Let's say you were Tamei on Pesach Rishon. Right? You have a makeup date a month later. Okay, so it's not... And did you guys do Chagiga with Ravadi this year? What did you do? No, not Chagiga, right? Okay, so in Chagiga, there's also a discussion of other Karbanot that might have Tashlumin. So Charlie's right. It's not 100% true to say that there's no world of Tashlumin in Karbanot. But I will say, Charlie, as far as I know, no one suggested there's Tashlumin for a missed Karban Tumit. Right, so I still think one could say, in this context, this sacrificial order does not know of makeup. Right, either you did the Tumit or you didn't do the Tumit. In fact, this is actually a very good. I think I have a great svara. Let's try it out on you guys. This is a good day. Two new things came. That Hasidish word about Yosef and a good svara. Here's my good svara, guys. Tell me why you think there shouldn't be Tashlumin for the Karban Tamid. I think by definition there shouldn't be. Who could tell me why?
Day's gone.
Well, think about it. What's the whole idea of a Tamid? What makes it the Tamid is that it happened every day, right? It's about regularity. It's about routine. There's something funny about saying, oh, I'll make up for yesterday's missed Tamid. Well, if it's for yesterday, then it's no longer Tamid, right? It's pretty reasonable svar, right? So maybe when it comes to a carbon that's all about regularity, right, there's no place for a makeup, which actually would be a lack of pal to dafyomi, because there you can make it up the next day. Yeah, Micah. Yeah. Look, you're absolutely right practically, but sometimes just in the world of analysis, you're curious what would happen. So I admit it. Like, it's probably highly unlikely that the Tumid won't happen. But I wouldn't say it's absolutely impossible. And sometimes in the world of analysis, it's worthy to think about an unusual case also. Okay? Yeah, Ellie?
Isn't the whole question of something to make up something after the time has passed?
Yeah.
So why would that not apply to a tumid?
Like, no, because I'm arguing you've missed the point already. The whole idea of the tumid is that it happens every day. No, but that chakras might also have this rachamim theme that's not dependent on daily structure. But in the carbon, all you've got is the tumid theme. Okay, Natan?
It could be that the whole concept of tumid is to make it up the next day if you missed the day before. It's inherently built into the tumid system that the tumid itself is making up each day for what you're supposed to do and what you might have missed.
Okay, you're fair. Yeah, no.
I mean, don't you have to also understand more like what exactly the function of tefillah is? Because you might just think like, oh, well, like Mona Esrei, keep Shmona Esrei, why can't I just like do the Shmona Esrei and have Kavanah for both of them? Like there's something added about like keep Shmona Esrei, even Shabbos.
Okay, that is a good question, but I'm going to duck it for now. It is a good question. Okay, we're good? Okay, let's move on to the next part. Okay, we got two parts left of this year. So I just wanted to raise this question that maybe if it's Rashut, Tashlumin's a little bit funny. So we're going to see now, guys, that some people try to play down the Rashut. Let's look at source 4 in the Tosfot. Okay, you're going to see he's going to play down the Rashut. Halacha k'divi yom Rashut. We do follow the rule that it's Rashut. But look what he goes. Look what they do, I should say. It's Tosfot. Lav davka Rashut. Great phrase, guys. What's lav davka? Not exactly. Don't take Rashut so seriously. What does it really mean? K'depreshit le'el. L'kachnik Rashut. So what do you mean Rashut? Levatla avur mitzvah acheret. What is he claiming? What makes it Rashut? Yeah, you understand? It really is an obligation. But it's an obligation when you've got nothing else calling for your attention. Apparently it's like a weak obligation. It's like the weak obligation of the halakha universe. So since it's the weak obligation of the universe, what happens? Anytime there's a clash, it always loses. Marv always ends up in group 4 in Sarachek. Right? It always loses to other things. But that's... What? I was debating if I should go with the score. I was debating if I should go with the score or not, but I decided to be nice. Okay, there we go. Okay, but in any case, but that doesn't mean that it's not an obligation. So notice, Tosfos has really watered down the idea of Rashut. If Tosfos is right, our whole conversation really has to change. According to Tosfos, yeah, it's an obligation. It's an obligation that loses really easily. When you have something else important to do, something else important beats Marev. But if you really have nothing else to do, it really actually is a Chiyuv. And that would obviously make the Tashlumin part a bit easier. Okay, just let me throw in one more idea, guys. We'll take a second, go to the Rush, source 6. The Rush has a different version of this, a different compromise. Says the Rush, Amar Bai, Alak Devi Merchov, Aram Alak Devi Mershut, V'kaimelan Alak Rava, it's Rashut. Mi Yuhani, Mi Li Hecha Delot Sali Le Klal. When I haven't prayed at all, it's Rashut. Avul Hechi did Sali Le Tzil Arvid, but I have prayed, Kvar Shav Yalechova. So he says, let's say I decided to pray Marv one night and I forgot Yalav Yavo when I was supposed to say Yalav Yavo. So you might say I shouldn't have to go back because it's a Rashut. But what does the Rush want to argue? Once I've asserted I'm going to pray it, so I'm kind of treating it like an obligation. So notice, I'll take comments in 1 second. We have two ways to kind of tone down the Rashut. You could go all the way. It's really Rashut. Marv is simply a voluntary procedure. We have Tosfos really toning it down. Tosfos says it's only Rashut when I've got some other challenge to my time. But short of that, it's obligatory. Now I have kind of a third position. It is Rashut, but if I already chose to daven, that would make it obligatory. And then if I made a mistake, I would go back. By the way, obviously, what possibly does the Rush open up? Maybe what's happened over the course of Jewish history, that the Jewish people have collectively taken on Mariv as an obligation. And now we can kind of navigate why our experience doesn't match the halakha. In technical halacha, shachrit is obligatory, mincha is obligatory, arvit is not. Why do all our souls have arvit? For whatever reason, right, Am Yisrael and their ritual instinct, we chose to take on arvit. Okay, now questions. Yeah, Ezra.
Is the Rosh Hashanah that each individual instance, like every night, arvit is starts out as a reshut event?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I think the former. I think the former.
To be off day,
yeah. Right, well, I think he says the collective one at the end. Yeah. Ezra, it's right. It's interesting, Ezra, because he starts out with one, at the end with the other. Because I think in the beginning it's about individual. Look at his last 5 words, though. What are his last 5 words? Right, the whole world has the custom to treat it. So I think he moves from your first model to your second model over the course of the piece. Okay, who else had a comment? Yeah, Benny?
I don't like sleepwear camps nowadays. Like, there's a little bit of worries, especially for women, that they got them marked 3 days in a row. And that makes like a
fear. We're going to get to women in 1 second, okay?
Okay,
yeah, Roey.
Right, isn't there, where he said that, like,
says Marv is iterations because meaning that you don't need to involve yourself in that any other mitzvah you're doing it. Isn't there an idea that any time you're opening a mitzvah, then...
No, but what if I haven't started one yet, and I have two mitzvot in front of me? I've got Marv and some other potential obligation. Apparently, Marv always loses. Right? Again, it's not that I'm already osik in one. I'm choosing which one to involve myself in. So there, Marv is the consistent loser. Yeah, Yonatan.
Is
the
social concept of like a weak obligation, is that like present anywhere
else? Oh, that's a very interesting question. Okay, so Yonatan's being clever. He's saying, wait, where do we have such a model? They have this model of, oh, it's obligatory, but it always loses. That's really interesting. I have to admit, I cannot offhand think of a parallel. I don't have a parallel to that. I cannot. Yeah, is it Sam?
Kind of parallel to this idea of where we cannot do, the rabbis can remove certain biblical laws with the concept of males. It's not that there's an obligation per se, but we've got this concept where something can lose out another idea.
Sam, that was clever. I don't really think it's parallel, but I don't want to debate with you right this second. Yeah, Ms. Gazzotta? Right.
You know, so, going to Minyan, is a key, not a key.
Yes. But, well, there's actually a little bit of debate about that, but let's assume you're right for now.
Well, you know...
Okay, there are Achroim who say that it's not really an obligation. That's correct.
So that's exactly the point. So if for decades, or more than decades, become almost an indicator of observance, does that mean that the key could shift the key status?
Look, I don't want to... It's a great question. I'm going to duck it also. Like, does that, what legal status that has? But I will just say one thing, just interesting food for thought. Okay, maybe someone might want to look this up. Okay, so you might say, let's say, I don't know, so one of you might be a real halachic, well, I'm sorry, because I'll say a real halachic man. I'm not being gender, just because that's what Russell Major wrote. Okay, but let's say a real halachic man. So you say, I shouldn't care what's happened, we should just care what the strict halach is. But there's a very powerful article a fellow named Gerald Blitzstein wrote, which is called Kaddish and Other Accidents. And he talks about how maybe we should have a certain faith in what I call the Jewish ritual instinct. That we've taken something on over time, whether that was the technical halacha, Am Yisrael knows what they're doing. So Kaddish, if you think about it, is a great example. Because in the Gemara, what is Kaddish not connected to in the slightest? There's no connection to mourning. Right? Kaddish in the Gemara is a powerful tefillah. You might have seen on Bracha Daf Gimel, Yehi Shmei Rabbah. There's no connection to mourning whatsoever. What happened at some point, I don't know when, in the Middle Ages... Right, it was decided that Kaddish would be an appropriate tefillah that a mourner would recite for the deceased. Now, I think one could safely argue that's become an incredibly powerful force in the Jewish community. Right, they have saying Kaddish for the deceased. But what if, like, you know, the halachic man got up one day in davening and said, "You guys don't understand anything. Right, really, Kaddish has nothing to do with the deceased." I think it'd be a mistake. Right, maybe Am Yisrael knew what they were doing when they transferred this tefillah. So if you want to look at it, guys, the tradition archive is online. Look up Blitzstein, Kaddish, and Other Accidents. It's a powerful idea. So I would say here also, you know, even if it's not technically an obligation, maybe there's certain faith in how Am Yisrael has taken things on over the years. Yeah, Yoni.
For the Rosh, is he kind of saying that kind of like in a metaphysical way, you're like making it a chiyuv, or you just believe that it's like a proclamation to yourself that it's a chiyuv?
Look, it's a little bit connected to Ms. Gedaya's question, which is, when we've done that, what level of, when we've taken it on, what level of obligation is that? How should we evaluate that?
But then, let's say we're going with the individual case,
yeah.
Wouldn't the Nachman be that if before you daven you say, I know this is a reshut,
Okay, that's interesting. That's clever, Yoni. You want to, like, cover all your bases. I'm davening Marv God, but don't take it too seriously. If I forget, Yavo Yavo, it's okay. Okay. All right, so we have different approaches to what level... Rishut might be. Wait, there was one more thing I wanted to do before the last thing. It's now escaping me. All right, we're gonna move on. It's okay if I don't recall what it was. Okay, so now let us... the women's issue. Okay, two issues to go, guys. I got about 8 minutes with the women, and then we'll do a great Meshach Hakma. Okay, so here's one of my proudest moments in life. I have a very pious wife. Okay, so I always like going to weddings with her. Because what happens at a wedding? You guys probably appreciate this also. Right, you finish the chuppah. Somebody calls out, "We're davening Marv." And then what happens? 60 men line up and 3 women. Okay? But I'm always proud because my wife is always one of the 3 women. Okay? I always point that out to her. It's usually her first cousin and some 3rd one. Okay? So that's what happens at a wedding. Okay? So why would that be? So it actually might be rooted in the halachic reality, which we'll get to right now. How many tefillah a day is a woman obligated to pray? So you could say all 3 positions. You could say 1, 2, or 3. Okay, what would be the argument of 1? Well, why would I exempt a woman? I exempt a woman based on the old rule of Mitzvah Aseh Shezman Gramah, right? A time-bound positive commitment. So if I go with Rambam, what might I say? The biblical level of prayer obligates women, because the biblical level is not Zman Gramah, but the rabbinic level might not. Okay, so that would be how I would get to one. How would I get to three? So this is actually a fascinating thing. Some of Farshim say that, you know, being a religious person means you turn to God and pray. It can't be that women are exempt from that. Basically, I don't care if it's Zman Gramah. Right, women should have the same religious life as far as that's concerned as men. Okay, so if you hold like that, you might get to a radical conclusion. What might you assume? Okay, I'm not sure if it's going to make the mothers in the room happy or not happy, that women are obligated to pray three times a day, right? So the Aruch HaShulchan thinks so. Okay, and my pious wife from the wedding, she also prays three times a day. Okay, so that is the other position. But the Mishnah Berurah has a very interesting compromise. The Mishnah Berurah says women are obligated to pray twice a day. Now, you might say, that's neither here nor there. Like, how'd that come up? Like, either you go in this Zman Gramah theory and they pray once a day, or you say Zman Gramah is irrelevant and they should pray. But basically, we said so far today, guys, how would Mishnah Berurah work it out? He says, Marv's or should. Okay, it's true what's happened over Jewish history. So I said, Am Yisrael's taken on. But probably this is sociologically true. More men have taken it on. Maybe women have not yet. Maybe they will now. But he wants to claim, since it's Rashut to begin with, and women did not historically take it on, so the Mishnah says that women should pray twice a day.
Does he say it's an obligation for men to pray three times a day?
Well, yeah, but again, but the Marv obligation would be a lesser. It gets back to the question, like, when you take something on, what status does it have? It would be a lesser obligation than the other two. Okay, so notice again, that could be another implication of the Rashut theory. Okay, we had one implication that we don't repeat the Amidah. Another implication might be, maybe women will choose to daven twice a day and not three times a day. Okay, we'll go to that so far? Okay, let's get to one last thing, though, guys. Source 9. This is a very beautiful source, and we'll close with this. Okay, we do like in the Raita when the halakhic analysis also leads to like broader religious meaning. Here's an interesting example. What have we said till now? We've said that if I go with a carbon theme, I have a reason to make Marv different. If I go with the avot theme, I have no reason to make Marv different. Okay, the Mesher Chacham was in Rav Meir Simcha Kohen. He was the Rav in Dvinsk. He passed away in 1926. Okay, and he has a beautiful commentary on Chumash. Let's see what he says here. Says the Mesher Chachma, "Vayomer Elokim b'maraot halayla, vayomer Yaakov Yaakov." Now he notices something very interesting, guys. It's great to be a close reader. Here's Breishit Memvav. Yaakov is about to go down to Egypt. When does he get a divine vision? What's the timing? Night. What do we say, guys? If you read Chumash carefully, every detail matters, including what time of day something's happening. When does Yaakov have another nighttime revelation? Right, the famous dream with the Sulam. Wait, notice, Yaakov seems to specialize in nighttime revelations. Okay, let's keep going. Okay, hine eitzel avam v'yitzchak lo matzanu zeh. Right, Yitzchak does not seem to be, you know, a creature of the night, a prophet of the nighttime. Rak b'Yaakov kan uveyetze. Now, why is that? So let's think for a second, guys. Here you have to, again, be a close reader and also have like a little literary flair. In most novels, what is nighttime going to represent? Yeah, darkness, a more foreboding time, a more difficult time. What if we say, I'm sorry? Okay, there we go. What are you thinking of? Little Wordsworth, Coleridge, what are you thinking of?
The intro to the Scrabble.
Okay. Okay. Very, very good, very good. Okay, you're an educated fellow. Okay, so. Okay. The wine's prepared, little Nachas. Your son knows the intro to the Scarlet Letter. Okay, so in any case, let's go back for a second. So here I think the imagery is very powerful. Why would Yaakov represent nighttime? Well, think about it. Among the Avot, doesn't Yaakov spend a lot of time in Galut? And has one could arguably has the most difficult life of, I think it's a pretty good claim, right? That Yaakov has the most difficult life of the Avot. Think about the Dina story and the Yosef story and Laban and Rachel and his brother. So it may make sense. There's something deeper going on here. Yaakov encounters the night times of Jewish experience, including Galut. Okay. Once that's true, okay, so now, all right, I'm just going to do the rest outside because I'm going to run out of time. So he says two very powerful things. One thing he says is there's an idea, you may have heard this idea, that the divine presence doesn't rest in Chutz Laretz. That maybe prophecy is limited to the land of Israel. Okay, but says the Mesher Chachma, now there are counterexamples, right? Yechezkel prophesizes in Babel. Okay, so some people say, but if you started in Israel, you can continue in Bavel. So says the Meshech Chachma, that's the message Yaakov's getting. What is this divine revelation at nighttime? Well, think about it. In both cases, where is he going? In the Lavan case, he's leaving Israel to go to the land of Lavan. Here, he's leaving Israel to go down to Mitzrayim. So there's a nighttime experience that Yaakov's having. And what's he being told? You can maintain a continuity and therefore still have be in touch with divine presence even outside the land of Israel. But then he does something clever. He says, then I could combine the Avot theme and the carbon theme. How can I bring a carbon at night? Well, I can't really bring a carbon. What can I do? I could continue what was started in the day. So I could continue my connection to divine presence with what happened before in the land of Israel. So that already is quite clever. Okay, and now for the last point, guys, the clincher. I'm not going to do this inside because I'm out of time. But in the last source, Rav Tzedek Kohen of Lublin, Rav Tzedek does something very powerful. Rav Tzedek says, maybe we can also explain it that based on this, why Marv is a Rashut. And even in the world of the Avot, and not, again, guys, this is more Drash. The simple Pshat is like the Pnei Yeshua. Why would Marv be a Rashut? Because in the carbon theme, there's no real carbon. It's just the leftovers. But think about it. What if I view Marv as symbolic of the night times of existence? One might be true. It is harder to find God in the nighttime of existence. It is easier to find God when the sun is shining. Says Rav Tzedek, therefore, Shacharit and Mincha are obligatory, and Marv is an option. So I think it's a very beautiful idea, and it also just expresses the fact that we all know, like, it's not always easy to find God, and we all go through our darker periods. And from that experiential level, that's why Marv could be Rashut as opposed to Shacharit and Mincha. So just to sum up, we have now, actually I'm not going to do a summary because it's already 12:50, even though, actually I will do it for 1 minute, sorry. Okay, just to, we'll just have to sing the Ashrei Nigun fast, quickly. Okay, here we go guys, very quickly. So we said Marv is Rashut. What were two implications of Marv being Rashut? Two implications. That's why there's no repetition of Amidah. For women, what might be the implication, says the Mishnah Berurah, women will be obligated to pray twice a day. Okay, excellent. We discussed that Rashut might be toned down. Okay, last two things. Okay, why is it a Rashut and not a Chiyuv? If you ask the Pnei Yeshua, what would he say? What would the Pnei Yeshua say? It's a Rashut because there's no real carbon. Ah, but what would Rav Tzedek of Lublin say? It is a Rashut because it is hard to confront God in the night times of existence. So I will end. First of all, parents, it's great to have you. You should all enjoy it. We should all succeed in finding our, you know, religious expression, both when the sun is shining and even when it's darker. All right. Yeah, Gadi, thank you. Can you send it to Rav Meish and to Michal? Yeah, thank you.